Wirecast, presented by Bird, Kulchin, Ford. Bird, Kulchin, Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome into the Bearcast on this Tuesday, August the 20th, 2024. It is a podcast that is the last of this offseason, which is very exciting because next week we will be previewing Tarleton State and talking about the actual games and subsequently wins and losses and the ramifications of all those sorts of things. So the countdown has been going on for quite a while, and the countdown is nearly about to hit all zeros here in the next few days. So welcome in. Craig Smoak with you as always, joined by Grayson Grundhaver. Got Jack McKenzie behind the scenes as well. Baylor football, with the season opener right around the corner, has made their starting quarterback announcement. Daquan Finn, no surprise there, is QB1. We're going to dive into that to start things off with. We'll also get into some scrimmage notes from this past weekend, which was the final look-in before they made the big decision on Daquan Finn and Sawyer Robertson and who would be the trigger man to kick things off in 2024. We'll also have your mailbag with a bunch of questions as well. But Grayson, before we get into everything, just how you doing this week, man? And I guess we're almost there.
It's been a good week and one of those weeks that I think is filled with excitement, right? Because you go into next week and it's all about the season. Like everything becomes about previewing games and just kind of, you know, moving along and seeing actual football. But this week was a good week because, you know, you get to hear about a scrimmage. You get to have notes about that. You get to kind of see how this team is forming, how they're improving, how they're growing. And then, of course, the Daquan Finn decision, which was one I feel like we've had to talk about for months just because it's been a battle that has dragged on for so long, but it was also one that was just kind of a fulfillment of what we had talked about because we both fully expected this.
Yes, yeah, so there was this battle that began brewing after the end of last season, and Blake Shapen goes and enters the transfer portal, ending an era where, you know, he had been the guy for a couple of years and going all the way back to the Big 12 championship game and all that came with the battle with Gary Bohannon. And next thing you knew, it was a whole new era because he was out the door and here was Sawyer Robertson. And then subsequently Daquan Finn through the transfer portal. And then this battle that's raged on since last spring. You knew it was going to have to come to a close here in the next few days. But started to wonder if it was going to drag into game week, quite frankly. They had the big scrimmage this past weekend. That was enough to give them their fill of what they needed to see. And so Grayson, Daquan Finn is the guy. I mean, they made an investment in both to bring them both here through the transfer portal. Sawyer originally from Mississippi State. We saw a little bit of him last year, but you knew when they brought in Finn, MAC player of the year, a guy who's very dynamic, and especially when you have concerns about the offensive line, there is a thought process that maybe he would have the edge, not only in experience and just big games and things like that, but also his mobility would probably come into play. Just what do you think this all boiled down to ultimately? Why now, other than the fact that they had to make the announcement soon, but your thoughts on Daquan Finn being the guy as expected and just what all this means?
I think this was always going to be an uphill battle for Sawyer Robertson, and a big part of it is just experience, proven experience. I mean, Daquan Finn has played a lot of football and won a lot of games at a pretty high level in the MAC, won a MAC championship, and beyond winning a MAC championship, won 11-2 last year. I just think he really turned that Toledo program around. They had been pretty mediocre for a while. He gets there, and immediately they're starting to win football games and make three straight bowl games and just have a lot of success. He put up a lot of numbers. Obviously, the MAC Most Valuable Player last year, but I think in large part, you mentioned the mobility aspect. I don't feel like we can state that enough because it is huge for this team. And it's huge for a team that's revamping the offensive line. It's huge for a team that I think most people would probably say could have a tough time running the football. So to give them another option to run the football, having more of an explosive ball carrier in Daquan Finn, I think is also huge. His ability to avoid sacks was something that was desperately missing from a year ago. I've mentioned this number a lot, but his sack rate when under pressure was just at 8.4% last year, whereas both Sora Robertson and Blake Shapen were in the mid-20%. And so that just kind of shows you a difference there. But in general, I think a lot of this just came down to experience in my eyes and really getting a trusted guy out there who has done it before. I think will add a nice calming aspect to this offense.
Well, it's good to have it all made official, even if it was what was expected from the very beginning. Kudos to Sawyer Robertson for making it a battle and dragging this thing out. And I'm sure it was disappointing on his end to receive the news, but it's a matter of somebody had to be the guy, and somebody had to be the guy behind the guy, at least to start things off with. So that's all squared away now. Daquan Finn, officially your starting quarterback for the Bears against Tarleton State, has played in close to 50 games over 5 years, and obviously comes over from Toledo, where he put up a lot of big numbers, played in a ton of games, as I just mentioned, nearly 50 career games, and hopefully all of that experience adds up to a nice combination of his athleticism and whatever the Bears have cooking on the rest of that roster to give them a dynamic playmaker that can help them lead the way. I mean, that's certainly what they're banking on by making him the guy. And excited to see him, and excited to see him without the reins on, so to speak, because we've seen glimpses of him, but it's normally during stretch periods or during individual position drills, and you can't really gather too much of that after a while. You've got to see guys actually play, and so we haven't seen him like, hey, let loose, the pocket's collapsing, take off and run, or go to your right and try to make a play down the field. We haven't seen him do any of these in-game things yet, so I'm very excited about that. But what is your best information on just how this was received by both parties? And just, I know that the first thought in fans' heads is going to be like, all right, what happens to Sawyer now? It's like, well, he can't go anywhere because the season started. But just, it's fair to say that people are going to wonder like how he takes it, because he came here to be the starting quarterback, and it's another year of being the backup.
I think that from a just my perspective on this entire situation, I don't think that anyone would handle it any better than Sora Robertson would. This guy is really a great leader, a guy that's been totally bought into the program since coming to Baylor, a guy that really is Baylor through and through. And so I think that while this decision, I'm sure, is tough, I also think that most people on this team knew where this decision was going to go. Daquan Finn had been getting pretty much all the one snaps for a while now, so I don't think this was a surprise. I don't think this was, just it took an announcement for a decision to be made. I think it was known for a while now, and from everything I can tell, I think Sora is still fully engaged with the program. And I also think it's important to remember Daquan Finn only has 1 year of eligibility. Sora still has another year after this season, so there's a good chance that he could be the guy going into next year being the starting quarterback. And I think the way that he battled this offseason bodes really well for that being maybe the case, but also just being, I think the staff's going to be a lot more confident in what he can do going into next year. And also for this year, like, Baylor hasn't had a guy stay healthy at quarterback for a really long time. It feels like every single year you're having to play multiple quarterbacks. So I kind of fully expect Sawyer to have to play at some point this season.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you wouldn't, I would have, is the fact that ever since about the 2015 season, they've had to use more than one quarterback to start multiple games, or at least one game. Mm-hmm. Going off the top of my head, I feel confident that it's closer to multiple, but I'm trying to think, like, was it only
Shapen in 2022 is the only one where he left in the middle of the West Virginia game, but I don't think he missed a full game. I think he still played in every game.
So I don't know if it was like exactly that to a degree, mm-hmm. but no, basically everybody's had to start one or more games every single year from the backup spot, if not the quarterback three spot, since 2015. So they're going to need Sawyer Robertson, to your point. And so, yeah, he's got to keep himself ready and needs to go into this knowing like, hey, I'm going to play at some point. Like, that's inevitable. And especially when we already have questions about the O-line. I don't care how evasive Daquan Finn is. Like, you know, you're still – he's still taking a step up in competition. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, going from Toledo, with all due respect to the Big 12, is a different animal. And so hopefully they can keep him protected. But, yeah, Sawyer Robertson's got to go into this knowing, like, you're still going to – need to play.
And they need him.
Yeah, like, you're still going to need to play. So I think that's what, you know, and going into it, and you saw when they added Daquan Finn, you had to have an idea of, like, maybe I'm not quite ready, or they're, and they told you that. Jake Spavital's been in this game for a long time. He knows how to handle these situations, and so best I could gather is they made their decision, and just based on what I heard, you know, he was on the phone with Sawyer, and they talked it out, and I think everything's good. But I just wanted to get your take on just sort of that perspective, because that typically is most people's worry is, all right, well, what happens with the guy that lost the competition? But, yeah, he's still got some time left in the saddle, and so stay ready and keep your head on a swivel, and you never know. You might get that call, and then you never let that call go. But for right now, it is the Daquan Finn show, and I think you have to be excited about not just him and this decision, but also the fact that Sawyer is here to be that backup. And so I like the room that they have, and let's go. Let's see what it looks like.
And I think last year you and I talked so much about how bland and boring the offense was last year, and I know you – especially we're just like this, we can't continue watching this. I think this is one of those moves that I think will get most Baylor fans really excited. I mean, he provides an electric ability that Baylor simply has not had at the quarterback position really since what, Seth Russell probably. I mean, Charlie had moments, but Charlie wasn't a runner like this. I mean, Daquan Finn is another level of rusher. So I think that's really exciting. I'll also just, I continue to mention this because I think it's really important. This truly was the first indication of Baylor's adapting to the new NIL landscape was when they landed him. This was a huge pickup. This is a top transfer portal quarterback. You can look on any website. He's basically top 15 everywhere when it comes to quarterbacks. I think he should be top 10 based on what he's done production wise. You look around the Big 12 and you compare what he's done in his career to all the other quarterbacks in the conference. This guy is a top five guy if you just go off of that. I know he wasn't playing Power Four competition every week, but the numbers, the winning, he's up there with anyone in this conference for the most part outside of maybe Cam Rising. And so I think that's really important to mention as well. There was a lot of competition for him, and Baylor was able to win because of this new NIL approach, and now they're able to potentially see the rewards of that this season. And I just think this is a very exciting move. I think it's going to add a lot of excitement for fans going into the season. I also think it's big because Jake Spavital came into Baylor and handpicked Daquan Finn to be his quarterback for this season. He was able to get the job done, land him. Now it's all about what does the product look like on the field.
Yes, and as a reminder, Daquan Finn last year, fifth year at Toledo, had 317 pass attempts, a 63% completion percentage, 2,657 yards passing, 22 TDs, 9 interceptions, also ran for 563 yards and 7 touchdowns. So a true dual threat and somebody who we can finally see without the irons on, the shackles on, come next Saturday against Tarleton State. Get to see some of that dynamic athletic ability. Hopefully he's not running around too much other than by design, because that is still the big question mark now that quarterback has been answered is, all right, how's the protection and how does that affect the rest of the offense and subsequently the rest of this team? But there you have it. It's official. Daquan Finn, Baylor starting quarterback to begin the 2024 season, and he will be backed up by Sawyer Robertson. And as much as Sawyer needs to keep his head on a swivel, hopefully they don't have to go too far further, because he started getting the Nate Bennett territory and things probably aren't going all that well, respectfully. Just nobody, not even Alabama's hoping to see their third string quarterback, you know, this season.
Especially a true freshman. That's just a tough ask.
Yeah. So he'll stay ready as well, but hopefully Daquan Finn gets to fully flex his muscles, and there's no like, well, I wonder what would have happened if we can just see it, and I'm excited to see it starting next Saturday. So there you have it, the big decision on the QB1 spot. And beyond that, that came out of the scrimmage this past weekend, and that was part of the deciding factor, just the final touches on what you needed to see before you decided to move forward with Daquan Finn. But beyond that, you got to see a lot of the rest of the team. I guess just what do you want to point out from what you heard? What's the rumblings from the scrimmage this past Saturday?
I think the biggest thing, my biggest takeaway was the offensive line in this scrimmage. Now, you could just say the offense in general because they took a huge step forward after getting really kind of dominated in the first scrimmage. Not kind of, they did get dominated in the first scrimmage. They played a lot better in this second scrimmage, and I think they probably raised the optimism on my part as far as what this offensive line can be, what this offense can be. They really did a much better job, specifically in the passing game. The pass protection got a lot better. They've kind of solidified their front five a little bit, which is nice to see. It feels like it's the five that has kind of been the consistent starter since the spring, since really Kurt Daneker went out. This has kind of been the starting unit for a while now. So I think it's good to see that there's some cohesiveness being built there, and I'm curious if that ends up being the group that starts. But overall, it was a good day for first string, second string, even third string offensive line. They had a really good day. They didn't allow many quarterback pressures, didn't allow many quarterback sacks, and allowed them to be productive in the passing game. So I think that area was probably the one that was the most important going in, and I think received the best results after.
Yeah, oftentimes you'll hear that first scrimmage, things aren't always the best, mm-hmm. especially on the lines. And so I didn't take too much from that. I mean, we already knew going into this season, into every scrimmage, that the offensive line is the question mark. I mean, it's just reality. That's just the fair takeaway, and that's the fair assessment on this team, and that's been the case all offseason long. So then when you hear maybe they didn't look so good in that first scrimmage, I can understand why people panic a little bit, but like, I don't think they were expected to look all that good necessarily in the first scrimmage. And look at that, by scrimmage two, they're looking a lot better. So that's encouraging. If you'd had heard otherwise, that would be obviously very concerning. We'll see, though, because that doesn't always tell the tale, you know, either. But you definitely wanted to hear that there was some improvement from scrimmage one to scrimmage two, so that's positive.
Right, and to be clear, this is not me saying, oh, now Baylor is going to have a top five offense line in the Big 12. It's just more so they took that step from being really bad the first scrimmage to getting closer to kind of what I expected in the offseason, right? Just getting to a point where you have a capable offensive line that maybe has the upside for a little bit more if some of these transfers or if the development goes the right way. Maybe they can be a little better than that. So it was encouraging. It's encouraging to see, you know, hear about guys taking steps forward, like Caden Soraki is really, I think, honing into being kind of their swing tackle, really. I think he might be the backup at both left tackle and right tackle. I don't think he's going to be the starter, but he's going to serve a huge role for this team, I think, going forward into the season. South Carolina transfer Sydney Fugar, he played really well in this scrimmage. He's kind of their, I think, backup guard, their probably top backup guard at this moment. So to hear about those two, I think, is also really important because it speaks to the depth and competition that they've been trying to form all offseason.
So left to right, what does the offensive line look like right now?
Yeah, so Alvin Ebasele at left tackle, which is nice to see because Caden Soraki was getting some of those reps during the week, so nice to see him kind of reestablishing himself a little bit. Ryan Lingyell at left guard, Colton Price at center, Omar Egbedian, the Montana State transfer, at right guard, and then Campbell Barrington at right tackle is kind of, that's the offensive line that I'm expecting week one, but we'll see. There's still another week left in quote-unquote fall camp, you know, the simulation week, so we'll see if some things change based on what they saw this weekend.
All right, so quarterback one named, offensive line improved in the second scrimmage. What else is noteworthy, you think, from the past few days?
So, I mean, I mentioned pass protection, and that directly leads into wide receivers playing well, right, because you're actually able to have time to throw the football. Ketron Jackson has still been out. He's expected to be back this week, according to Dave Aranda. Same with Matt Jones.
There goes my most breakout improved, whatever the category was that I listed Ketron Jackson mm-hmm. for.
I think he'll be all right.
No, I know.
Yeah,
but
I think we'll see, but it's Dave seemed very optimistic about what his kind of the future was for him going into the first game. So I think he'll be okay. But it was also a nice opportunity with him out for some other guys to step up. And the one who I specifically heard had a really good performance and I think it's a very important one, was Hal Presley. We have not seen the best football from Hal during his career at Baylor. I think he was unfairly not redshirted his true freshman season. And if he would have been, then he would have another year after this season. Instead, he's a senior. He's dealt with injuries, and he's dealt with inconsistent play by himself and by the quarterback position. Last year, he started the season really strong and then faded. And then we saw moments in 2022, like the Texas Tech performance, where he played really well on the road in Lubbock that night, but it just hasn't been consistent. He played really well this week, and I would probably say he had the best performance of all the receivers in that scrimmage, and that's really nice to see. And I think he allows this team to, I think, unlock some upside in their offense.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of time for Hal if he's going to show what people feel like he's capable of. The clock is ticking. I guess technically he still has another year left, and actually two if he wanted it because of the COVID redshirt year, or is he after that?
I think this is his last
year. Okay, yeah, because he was started freshman in 2021.
He should have been redshirted in 2021, though, and he was forced to play a role behind the starters, which were Tyquan Thornton, Drew Estrada, and R.J. Sneed.
Yeah, so he could technically redshirt, but it wouldn't do you any good because that would be your last year would be a redshirt year. So I was thinking he's past the COVID barrier, so he doesn't have that sixth year. That's what I was thinking of.
He could redshirt this year, but he's not.
Well, that's what I mean, is like it's either this year, which is clearly not happening, or it's next year, which would make no sense because you wouldn't redshirt your final year of college because that.
Well, there is no next year. He's done. He's out of eligibility. He's senior.
So if he hasn't redshirted, how would he not have a redshirt year?
Because he didn't use it. He's got 4 years. Remember, you got 5 years at Baylor, but only 4 years to play. This is his fourth year of playing.
All right, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, yeah, that's also what I'm saying is like, yeah, there's no year to redshirt because if you came back to school, you'd have no eligibility. You'd be redshirting. No, so, yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. But, yeah, so that's not obviously something you're going to do. So it's this year or that's the end of it. You're not going to come back to school to redshirt and then get a call from the NFL after not playing for a season.
Yeah,
so
this is it for Hal.
He's facing it, and that's good to hear that maybe he's feeling some of that pressure and acknowledgement of the fact that the time's ticking and it's time to perform. So, getting an opportunity in practice to play a little bit more and taking advantage of that is what he needs to be doing. So that's encouraging to hear about Hal Presley.
Absolutely. I think, on the flip side defensively, right, because, I'm sitting here talking about how the offense won the day. So naturally the defense took some lumps, right? And, in the secondary they had ups and downs, I would say. I would say more the second unit got hit more by bigger plays in the third unit, more so than the first unit. They gave up some, but it wasn't, I don't think, as explosive as maybe the other units were. A lot of that is because they weren't getting pressure on the quarterback, which is kind of, I'm not going to call it concerning because they were getting way too much pressure on the quarterback the first scrimmage, so you were kind of hoping things would even out a little bit. But yeah, the first string guys, I felt like on the offensive line did a really nice job. I know Jackie Marshall did get a sack on Daquan Finn. He was one that stood out. Brendan Bett, Steve Linton were a couple guys that also stood out. And then Alinus Noel was another one that Dave Aranda mentioned, especially in the run game. He's going to be a load to deal with, I think, up front. And that's a huge shift from what they had to deal with a year ago where they didn't have a true nose tackle.
Yeah, Alinus Noel, getting him from Texas Southern was a huge move. And I do wonder about the adjustment period of just, facing Texas Southern level competition and then facing Big 12 level competition. There is a difference, although there are plenty of big-time athletes in the SWAC, so I don't know how much of an adjustment really to expect, but that's encouraging to hear because he's somebody that is going to be needed right away, right out of the gates, and was a big-time pickup for them late in the cycle when they had the curveball of a couple medical retirements and then scrambling to figure out how to fill those, and then post-spring trying to find guys, and eventually Noel being there to be the guy was timely and needed. So yeah, that's also good to hear.
To have a veteran like that with so much experience, I know the level of competition is going to be a step up, and we've actually seen some guys who have transferred to Baylor really struggle with that. And so that is a little concerning for sure, but The good news is I think we're hearing a lot about Alinus right now, that it gives you some confidence about kind of what he brings to the table. And obviously his size is unquestionable. I mean, he's 330 something pounds. He's huge. So that obviously fills a need regardless, right? Just to have a bigger body, a bigger frame like that, which is good. I also think they just have a lot of versatility up front. They have so many combinations that they can use. When they're in the peso package, they can have Garmin Randolph and Steve Linton on the edge. You could have Jackie Marshall and Cooper Lands on the interior to give you four really good pass rushers, which is intriguing. You could have Alinus in the middle with, you know, two true defensive ends on the outside. So I just feel like these combinations are going to make them much more creative defensively, while also just sticking to the consistent theme of being strong up front and stopping the run, which they could not do a year ago.
So the offensive line looking a bit better this week than last week. The starting quarterback named, some good things on the defensive side as well. Anything else here from the scrimmage?
No Matt Jones this week, so Jeremy Evans actually stepped into that role. That's kind of good confirmation on who's the primary backup there at Mike.
Thought it was, you know, Carmelo Jones or Jeremy Evans, or, you know, I guess there's only so many options. But, yeah, that's something that was a question mark of who's up next, so to speak. So, yeah, Jeremy Evans. For right now, that's good info to know.
And passing over guys like Josh White.
Yes.
I think Brooks Miller is more of a will, so that doesn't really give us too much confirmation there. But yeah, Jeremy Evans got most of the one reps. I do think Carmelo Jones is still a candidate to kind of be the true backup. I think there is still a battle there, but it's nice to see that someone is maybe emerging from that group. I'll also mention a guy that was mentioned a lot was East Carolina transfer Ra-Ra Dilworth, and we haven't talked about him too much since he announced his transfer decision. It was kind of at a weird timing where I know we talked about it, but it just felt like it kind of went under the radar a little bit, but he is the true backup at will, and he's also going to play a variety of packages. He's not your typical will size, but has very good speed, was a former four-star guy who went to North Carolina originally, so nice to see him stacking good days together and becoming more of a guy who I think they feel like they can count on at the linebacker spot, which really does need some more depth guys to emerge.
Yes, it does. There is a lot of questions still remaining on this team, and typically you start up front, but that's been you know, handled somewhat through the transfer portal, and we won't really know until we get on the other side of it, but it is encouraging to hear positive updates on both sides there. And then, yeah, throughout the rest of the defense and offense, I mean, to hear Hal Presley's playing well, Ra-Ra Dilworth, who I just went and looked, and yeah, he just, I think, got lost in the shuffle of people leaving and coming in both, because, yeah, I don't remember, I mean, I know we've talked about him, but I don't remember talking about him in the same vein as some of the other guys. But he also, I don't know, I mean, Jordan Abers left a couple days before that, Javon Gibson left, like, right before that, Sidney Fugar committed right before that, so, yeah, I think maybe he just got a little bit lost in the shuffle to some extent.
And he committed without visiting, so there was
I just remember
intel.
There being a big talk about him.
Right, there wasn't a lot of intel before he committed. It was just kind of like, hey, commit to Baylor, and you're just like, oh, who's this guy? And so I remember that being one of those kind of really surprise additions that they had. But nice to see that it appears to be paying off.
Yeah, no, it does. So Ra-Ra Dilworth, a name to get to know as well at the linebacker spot. 6'2", 195 was what he was measured at. Not sure what he's at now, as everybody's updating their websites and rosters and everything else with the latest. But, yeah, good size, and appears to have made some noise this offseason, so get used to hopefully hearing some more positive noise coming from Ra-Ra Dilworth here moving forward the next few weeks.
One more, I guess, note, defensive backs, just really quick there. So it seems like Caden Jenkins and Chateau Reed are your starters at cornerback. Obviously, Caden, not surprising at all. Chateau Reed, I was a little surprised by, just because you got Tevin Williams and Snacks Johnson as guys who I do think are very capable cornerbacks as well. All four of them are going to play a lot, so I don't want to be too, it's not a concern, right? Because you're able to rotate these guys in. If someone's playing well, you keep them in the game, and they've been very rotation heavy when it comes to the cornerback position, because they play so much. They put guys on island a lot. They play press coverage a lot, so they're able to rotate quite a bit at that position. But worth noting, I think, for now. At safety, I think it's really going to be kind of this kind of, I don't know, a bunch of moving parts. I'll just say that, because I think Carl Williams is the only guy that's going to be on the field almost all the time. But then you have Kendrick Simpkins, Devin Bobby, Devin Lemire for two other spots. And so I think they're kind of going to rotate in as well. I think DJ Coleman will play a role in that too. But it's kind of tough to get a read on how much everyone is going to play different positions, especially because Carl might play some star. And then Carl might play some field safety. And then, so if you're rotating like that, it obviously changes some things as well. So that's something to keep an eye on. I would just say, of all the guys that I think will for sure be on the field at safety for pretty much all the snaps, I think Carl is the one guy that truly will be a fixture in the secondary at safety. The other guys, I think, will rotate in, and then you'll kind of figure out who your best guys are as the season progresses.
Well, he didn't get as much attention as Caden Jenkins got, but he's like your next best bet to be the next guy in the NFL sooner rather than later. I just think size, his mental strengths, just how young he is, but also how you talk to him and you're like, that's a guy who sounds like he's already getting ready for the NFL. Mm-hmm. And also his ability that we did see on the field. I mean, he's got some talent. So clearly played a lot right away and already being counted on to be one of their better players on defense. So, yeah, I think Carl Williams is the fourth, that is a guy who you definitely have circled along with the Caden Jenkins this year amongst some others as far as the, you know, the best players on this team and just the best players moving forward, especially young guys that have a chance to continue elevating themselves. I think Carl Williams is a guy that has a lot of high upside. So that's exciting. Yeah, I've just been wondering about star. I mean, this is a year where the defense has changed. You know, we used to talk so much about like Jack linebackers, and now it's more of like, it's not really just Jacks. It's not really just linebackers. It's not really just edge rushers. It's like tweeners. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the secondary is kind of in that same mode where it's not just corner, free, strong star.
Right.
It's a little bit more of just, what look are they in? Mm-hmm. What is the offense doing? And so it's just, it's a little more gray as far as assignments and clear-cut roles on any given down, you know?
And what do you need on the field at specific times?
Right.
Because you're exactly right. Kendrick Simpkins is much better as a pass rusher and guy stopping the run as opposed to a guy who's left in single coverage. And so that's where you might see Carl Williams move up to star to cover a slot receiver, for instance, or cover a zone that is a little bit farther back. I think that's where you could see that with Carl. And that's where you could see Carl out there with Devin Lemire, Devin Bobby as potential safeties. And then you'll also see somewhere they want Kendrick's rushing ability, because that's what he was great at Western Kentucky. Got after the quarterback. He wreaked havoc. You want that on the field as well. And so it's just getting that rotation right and get those situations and packages right. I'm very curious that first game, just how much they're going to rotate and if that starts to get a little confusing. Because it feels like they have a lot of packages that they're trying to throw out there. They brought in a lot of guys that I think fit certain packages really well. And so they're going to have to be really in sync with their timing and getting everything organized. And I think that's a big reason why having Dave Aranda as your defensive coordinator and not having to deal with all of the other stuff all the time, I think is really, really important and should help this group be a little more cohesive.
Yeah, I would think so. And very excited about seeing Aranda's fingerprints all over this defense starting next week, as he will be calling the plays. And, you know, Gary Patterson had his time here. I think he's probably still in and out to some extent. Hadn't heard much the past week, you know, after he was spotted following the announcement that he wasn't going to be working with the team anymore. So I'm sure from afar he'll still have his input, and obviously had his input this offseason. But I'm looking forward to seeing that combined with just maturity, guys growing up over the course of another offseason, and Aranda having his full hands right in the mixing bowl. What does all that turn into? Because I think you assume the offense will be better based on the changes, and it's also like, how could it be much worse than it was last year? I mean, that you know, not to try to put too much mustard on it, but I mean, that really was one of those things after a while, like halfway through the season, you're like, oh my God, like how can we watch? Like, this is awful. I don't expect that on offense. I expect them to be better. I also don't think they'll be like the 2014 Bears either. Right. But you know, defensively, I also think they can be better. I'm curious as to how much, because I think it's not easier offensively to be better, but I think it kind of is in some ways. And with defense, there's just so much to that with Aranda being in charge and the expectations of him being in charge. I just, I'm so ready to see what that looks like of him calling plays. And is it drastically different? Is it not that different? We've just, you know, thought that it would be massively different, and it's really not that different. Hopefully that's not the case, because that means they're probably not playing very good defense. But yeah, I'm just, we've been talking about it for so long now. I'm just thrilled to finally be at a point where we're going to see him actually in action making these calls and seeing the tweaks here and there and how Carl Williams fits in versus how, you know, this player fits in this package. It's a very exciting that we're at that point now.
Naturally, when there's a lot of change, it comes with a lot of questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
And I think that's kind of where we're at, is just this point where, okay, all this change happened, all this momentum seemingly happened and formed, and now it's just about, okay, does that translate to the field? Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it does come down to winning football games. It doesn't really matter what you do in the offseason unless you win games. And so that's kind of where things are at now. I think that I still have questions, but I also think there is some optimism about the fact that Dave Aranda, basically everywhere he's been, when he has been the play caller, they've done well defensively. And that gives me at least some hope on that side. And that's kind of the same with Spavital. What he's done in his past, his track record, leads me to believe they're not going to be bad on offense, at right. least. That's kind of that's the vibe that I get, at least.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't expect them to be 2014 breaking records or anything like that, but I do see like how the offense is just simply a little bit better. It's harder to picture the defense and like how much different mm-hmm. they might look. Because of the offense, I think it's just being more exciting, being, you know, enjoyable to watch to some extent.
With a totally different scheme.
With a totally different scheme that's just going to be new in general. But with the defense, I'm curious to see what differences there are with mm-hmm. Aranda calling plays. So that's just more of a mystery to me that I'm excited to see unwrapped here in less than 7 days from now, or no, a little over 7 days from now, excuse me, getting ahead of ourselves here. So anything else from scrimmage practice notes this week? I think we covered quite a bit of just the things that are standing out at the moment.
I think we covered most of it. Obviously, if you want more, go to Sikkim 365 Premium side. Colt and I actually collaborated on a huge insider note article, various sources, various news that we heard, and kind of just packaged it all together. So tons of news and notes on that side. Be sure to check that out if you haven't.
All right, so elsewhere, there was some other pretty cool stuff in regards to football this week. It's been a crazy offseason in terms of just constant news. I think that's probably most programs around the country, thanks to the transfer portal era. There's never not, you know, player movement or things like that. You combine that with the coaching hot seats and those cycles that come and go, to the point where we saw Baylor hire a couple of different O-line coaches this offseason, because that's just the way that it works. There's all those types of things that keep the offseason fun and interesting. There's change in uniforms, as we've seen Baylor and a number of other Big 12 and national teams do as well. But there's also the new digs that were a part of this particular offseason for Baylor. So you talk about a season of change. You've got the normal turnover of your roster and the excitement that comes with gaining and losing players. You've got the excitement of some new threads. But for the Bears, this 2024 season, there was also the excitement of knowing what was being constructed in the background, and that was the remodeling of their entire setup as a football program on campus, whereas they've been, you know, sharing facilities and have been kind of crammed and, quite frankly, not even sort of, but very much behind the times, whereas most football programs of their stature have their own standalone buildings or their own areas on campus. They've been kind of squeezed in comparison. And as I mentioned, sharing facilities or just kind of running out of space. And Baylor as an institution has been growing so wildly. So it was pretty big news when they announced that they were going to be building, for all intents and purposes, their own football field house, and also remodeling the indoor and just going all in on making some overdue but now timely changes. And we've seen that growing in the background, the new football offices. We've seen the the drawings, and we've seen the construction cones and all of that when visiting practice the last few months. But it was finally, time, as we noticed in the last couple of practices, to start counting down the days to opening up the Fudge Football Center. And here we are, and it's not like the ribbon hasn't been cut yet, but we noticed last week that the paint was going on and the logos were going on the field sides, the walls that you could see from the field, like the Big 12 championship years and all that. And now we've seen the video, just like we saw with basketball, of football starting to see their brand new Fudge Football Complex digs for the first time. And there was a 30-second or so clip that made its way out there through Baylor Athletics yesterday of the players just kind of roaming through some of the hallways. I'd expect we're going to see more on that front in the coming days, even probably today. I would imagine we'll see, I would assume, if not today, in the next couple of days, we'll see more and more on that. But, man, that's how far we've come now, where you're actually starting to see the Fudge Football Complex get opened up and players be able to check it out. And I've been waiting on this for a long time because I just love stuff like that, especially when it's as potentially game-changing as this project is for this football program, because it's been something that, when you make a list of strengths and weaknesses, this has been on the weakness side, their facilities. And so now they've caught up. They're, far past the opening now. I mean, they're starting to move in. And, what did you make of the video that you saw and just kind of the reaction from players and the more that I imagine we're going to see here in the coming days as far as opening this bad boy up?
Baylor now has the best facilities in the country, or at least up there, when you talk about basketball and football. I mean, they are at the top of the line now. I know, McLean is now 10 years old, which is kind of interesting. But I think for me, this is just one of those things where you look at it and you see all the pictures and you see all the things that they have now in the film room and the pools and the, weightlifting room, just everything. It's so state of the art. It's going to be really, really cool. And I think, when the basketball one opened, I heard so many great things about that one, just how cutting edge everything was technology wise and just how they upgraded in such a huge way. This might even be a bigger jump just because of what they've been kind of not necessarily dealing with, but just kind of where they were at before this was built, sharing a lot of their resources, sharing a lot of the space and the room for the staff and for the players. This is a game changer in my eyes, and this is something that was mentioned a lot during recruitments as well, when you talk about guys who made their commitment decisions over the course of the last year, just being really excited about this opening up, being excited to come visit when this is done. And so that's going to be a big recruiting piece as well, I think, going forward. I think prospects are going to be really intrigued by this and think this is really cool, and also see the benefits of something like this and how this could help form them into NFL players, successful players in college, potential All-Americans, things like that. I think that all comes with it, right? All of these resources. So it's very cool to see Baylor investing in this. I think it's really important. And despite what people say about how NIL is all that matters now, this is still something that can be a game changer for a university, especially one like Baylor.
Yeah, I think facilities still matter. They may not matter as much in terms of all the bells and whistles. Like, the arms race started to become, we've got so much money, we don't know where to spend it because we don't pay the players, so let's get the crazy, let's get a like amusement park slide in one side of the building, and let's do like chocolate fountains in the other side. It was like Willy Wonka. It was like, just what crazy stuff can we keep adding to the facilities? And now that's sort of stemmed off, because you don't need the crazy stuff that you're just trying to, like, the money's got to go somewhere. What crazy thing can we come up with? Now the money goes to the player, but you still need to have the nice facility that players enjoy being in and have room to spread their wings and develop and, just be comfortable. And that goes for the coaches as well. And just your day-to-day, like, if you worked in a better office, would you not have a better day-to-day?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it as well. And so add in just that it was time. I mean, the facilities in comparison to a lot of their Big 12 brethren, kind of archaic. And the fact that you were still sharing facilities, not the biggest deal in the world, but just not what a program of that caliber is supposed to be doing at this stage. And so you've seen Tech make their big facility updates that we'll get a long look at, I'm sure, this offseason with the big end zone project. Kansas is undergoing huge stadium renovation. They're not even playing at home this year because of the stadium renovations that are ongoing. And, various others have or are in the process of making big changes as well. So you just got to keep things fresh and new and evolving. And this Fieldhouse project was a big one. And so to get the name officially correct, the Fudge Football Development Center, I want to make sure I get that on the nose, but the Fudge Football Development Center, just cool to see it, you know, go from seed planted to completion. Mm-hmm. And it's not totally complete. They're still moving in. Like, I know that there's still like paint drying, and it's kind of like the basketball arena of where it's not all the way done 100%, mm-hmm. but it's good enough to move in and good enough to get to work. And it was cool to see the players' reactions to the little snippet that we got. I'm hoping to see a lot more of that kind of stuff, because I do enjoy the joy on the faces of the right. players and the coaches when they get, you know, some new excitement to go crazy over. And in this case, it's a very nice football development center, thanks to the Fudge family. So the newest addition to campus is just about complete, and hoping we're going to get like a walkthrough here in the near future. Right. I think Brent Ingram said that they're planning on that, like they did with basketball, for the media to have a chance to tour. So mm-hmm. I think that'll be really cool. But yeah, that was another big piece of news this week. So yeah, looking forward to more of that. And players seem to like it, based on what I could tell. They seem pretty excited.
Absolutely. And I mean, I just social media and everything like that, you had guys just raving about it, especially the locker rooms mm-hmm. were something that really stood out to the players.
Well, it stood out to me just how like big it was. I mean, you know, if you think about it, you don't really recall too many videos of when they were like in the football offices mm-hmm. all that much.
No.
And like, I'm even thinking right now, like there's like maybe a video here and there if you got like a glimpse of a hallway or something, mm-hmm. but that's about it. Like, and then yesterday they showed the video and it's like these massive ceilings, and it's
hard to gauge when we're out there just looking at the building, like brick walls, envisioning what it looks like, and then you see it in these videos and you're like, wow, turned out great.
Yeah, so we got a glimpse of the locker room, and it's kind of the main area that they'll be walking through most of the time, like as far as the coaches' offices and stuff. But I do very much look forward to seeing the indoor and more of that as it's like completed, mm-hmm. and because we haven't really seen it, like, I mean, as far as like the whole setup of how it's incorporated mm-hmm. into the rest of the building and the sky walkway and the things like that that are I don't know where they are as far as are they totally finished yet or not, but
I think we got a hint because they posted a picture of the weight room, mm-hmm. and I think you can see the top of the sky bridge before it goes out into the open. And so at least you have that, because I think that's the connecting point, is from the weight room to the indoor facility. So at least we got kind of an imaginative
glimpse, but I'm looking forward to seeing like what it really looks like how all that really flows from one place to the other. So yeah, that's very exciting, especially somebody who's covered the program for a long time and has seen it the way that it's been mm-hmm. to now what it is. It's like the basketball arena. It's a game changer in a major, major way. So exciting stuff there. All right. Anything else before we get into the mailbag here?
No, let's do the mailbag. We got a lot of questions to roll through.
All right. DJ Carrion, despite already having a chip on our shoulders, how has Baylor's recent recruiting class contributed to the team's performance attitude this season, specifically within fall camp? Has it sparked a fire or a sense of unity in the team leading up to Tarleton?
I know we've mentioned this a lot before, and I don't want to keep saying that it doesn't matter, because it does. When you see an off season that has positive reviews and some momentum to it, that part does matter. But I think for this team specifically, what happened to them last year and then all the changes that were made this off season matters infinitely more than what Baylor's doing for future recruiting classes. That's how it is.
Yeah, I mean, the future doesn't matter as much if the present doesn't go well. So I think you have an eye on the future and you're excited about the possibilities there. But I think everybody knows, like, right now, going and beating Tarleton and then the next week doing the next thing and the next thing, that's all that matters now at this point. Everything else just sort of hinges on that. But it was a really good offseason. All that matters now, though, is winning on the field. And that's the only thing that will keep the good times going. So that's where all the focus needs to be. And I think that it is, and I think that everybody's got a pep in their step and seems excited about this team, but I don't think it's necessarily motivated, certainly not solely by last year. I think the thing to remember is that even though the faces can stay the same and the coaches can even stay the same, like, every year is a different team. Mm-hmm. Every year is a different team. And you can take 90% of the same team, and one year they're one way, and the next year they're better or worse or whatever. So it's a – it's a lot of different circumstances and things that come into play, but this is its own team. It's not last year's team.
Right. There's a hunger, I think, in that locker room that they didn't have last year. But again, I don't think it's due to recruiting. Like, especially future recruiting. Like, I mean, not to kind of drag it down, but it's like, what do the guys on the current roster really care about that outside of, oh, like, positive news? Like, that's about it. But this team is focused on the season because last year was tough. But then it's this offseason of change and renewal of optimism and positivity. And I think all of that is really nice and helps contribute to them having a successful offseason.
Yeah, it's just more good news to spread, but I don't think the players are too enveloped in what's going on recruiting wise. Overrated in terms of expectations and improvement. Which position group has changed your mind the most this offseason?
For me, I think it's got to be linebacker, and it's really because of the emergence of Keaton Thomas. I was very nervous about this group at the beginning of spring because you're kind of relying on Matt Jones, who I view as a known commodity, and then Keaton Thomas, this major unknown. I mean, I liked his film, but he hasn't played linebacker very long. He had 1 year of JUCO film, and so it's kind of like, can you really rely on that? But I think he's really been a guy that has made me more optimistic about what that group can be, and I think his strengths really fit Matt Jones's weaknesses as well, and I think vice versa. And so I think they really are going to do a nice job together at the linebacker position. I think Dave Aranda is also going to be a key part of that.
I think a wide receiver with the additions they made, I feel better about that group thanks to Ashton Hawkins and particularly him, but we'll see to the extent like a Jamal Bell also produces. But I think there's a lot of buzz about, you know, what these, especially what Ashton Hawkins can do in this offense. And I'd say defensive line as well. It seems like they address things pretty solidly. If they hadn't gone and grabbed Alanis Noel, probably be a bit concerned, but they seem to answer a question, although I still have my questions in regards to just him in general and how much he's going to matter. But I do feel better about the D-line than I did a couple of months ago. I'll say that. All right, Kasich Bear. Do y'all like Carl Williams switching to safety instead of Devin playing that spot?
One more above
that.
Jared Burr.
Oh, with the offense winning the first half on Saturday, could y'all tell if the O-line was a major factor improvement? We've read from some of y'all that they were improved, but could you elaborate on what aspects they looked together on? Thank you.
Right. I kind of mentioned that at the beginning, just talking about the offensive line. So if you want to go back and listen to that, go for it. But I think the biggest area was pass protection. They were not very good in the first scrimmage in that regard, got a lot better in this scrimmage. And I think that was kind of the biggest area of improvement that you saw from scrimmage one to scrimmage two. So yeah, there was a lot of improvement there. And I think that's a great sign that they're trending in a good direction going into the season.
Still the biggest question mark,
it
though.
Is.
I yep. mean, and will remain that way. Kasich Bear, do y'all like Carl Williams switching to safety instead of Devin playing that spot?
I think that all the buzz we've heard about Carl Williams is just one of those things where he needs to be on the field.
About Lemire, to be clear, right?
Yeah, Devin Lemire, because the reports were that Devin Bobby and Carl Williams were starting at high safety, and then Kendrick Simpkins was starting at star. But to be clear, I expect all of them to play a lot. And so I don't think that move indicates that guys aren't going to play at all. I also think that they could make changes this week going into the first game of the season. But I think in general, the only guy that I'm very confident in the safety group and star group that's going to be on the field all the time is Carl Williams. I think he has shown enough this offseason to warrant that. He's very versatile, which is very key, I think, in this defense. I think that makes a lot of sense. I will also say I think Devin Lemire, Devin Bobby, Kendrick Simpkins will all play a ton. And then I think DJ Coleman is kind of another one that will likely rotate in there as well.
Also from Kasich Bear, whose skill set and playing abilities are better, Williams or Lemire? Do y'all think the staff got it right with this switch?
So I think Williams is more athletic and better in one-on-one coverage situations, but I think Lemire is a better tackler and more opportunistic. Those turnovers that he forced in 2022 give me a lot of encouragement, I would say, about what he could bring to the table this season. We haven't really seen that from Carl a lot, But again, we've seen a lot more of Devin Lemire than we have of Carl. So I think that's just kind of more of an unknown. Again, I think the staff got it right in the fact that Carl Williams needs to be on the field. As far as the other positions, I'm not really sure on that. I think Devin Bobby and Devin Lemire are both kind of interesting. They both have their strengths, and so I could see them both playing a ton, like I've already mentioned. But again, getting Carl Williams on the field is a big thing. I also want to mention here, because we have a comment from Mr. Lemire, Devin Lemire's dad, I believe, on the website, just talking about a lot of things. We're not going to read that on here, but I just wanted to address it really quick. I feel like for us on this podcast, we've talked about Devin a lot. I feel like I've probably been the most supportive of Devin Lemire during his time at Baylor and before Baylor, covered his recruitment extensively, had him rated as a four-star prospect coming into Baylor, was really excited about what he did during the 2022 season, felt like he was one of the most impactful defenders on that team. Going into last year, I thought he might be their best defensive player, and he had a disappointing season on what was a disappointing team. Everyone took their lumps last year. Everyone had struggles a year ago. Everyone got called out for those struggles. And we've talked about that on both sides of the ball. There were issues and people had their, you know, problems. Players had their struggles. And I think everyone would say last year was a tough year for everyone. And I think Devin would probably say he didn't play his best football last year. He also got injured in the first game of the year. And so he was always trying to battle back from that. But I feel like I've been very high on Devin Lemire's ability. I think he's a guy that has great football instincts. I think he could be an impactful player for Baylor this year. So it's a little disappointing to read, you know, some of these comments that have been posted on here, because I don't feel like we on this podcast or myself have ever really been unfair to Devin at all.
All right, so Wyatt Smith, which players for offense and defense will surprise fans in the home opener?
I think defense. See, this is hard, right, because we've talked about a lot of these guys. I think defensively, Keaton Thomas, if he fits that mold, he might surprise some people. Steve Linton, I think, fits that question pretty nicely on defense as well. Offensively, I mean, we've mentioned Ashton Hawkins a ton. So again, I don't know if that's really a surprise. I think the other one might be Michael Trigg. I think maybe they try to get him involved in that first game and get him going as well. So I guess that's kind of the group I'm looking at surprises.
So basically the new guys is what you're looking at there. As far, I mean, that's the guys I'm looking forward to, but I'm also looking forward to some of the guys returning as well, just to see how they've grown up after another off season. We mentioned a lot of their names on this podcast. I don't know in terms of like surprise though. I don't know. I think that'll probably just depend on who you're talking to at the time of what they would be surprised by per se, but
like would a Linus Noel playing well surprise people? Maybe, I guess for but some we've people, mentioned him a lot. I think Jackie Marshall coming back from injury, but again, there's expectations there, so I don't know if he's really a surprise candidate either.
Yeah, so I don't know about surprise, but I think there's a lot of new faces that could, you know, come in and maybe people aren't very familiar with, and they could be surprised by how good some of these new guys are. To answer your question, Wyatt, I do appreciate that question. And I think there's just a lot to learn about this team, a lot of unknowns. And so that's exciting, is we're going to get to start learning some things that are based on just performance here coming up, not more speculating or whatever. It's going to be like, hey, this guy did this against this team this week, and you know, go from there, build on that or improve that or whatever. And so I'm looking forward to whatever surprises are coming our way this season, what we think we know that we don't, or what we don't realize that we're about to. That's part of the fun. And so yeah, there will be surprises coming for sure. Where do you think Sawyer's head is at after DQ getting named QB1, as always? Thank you. Well, thank you, Wyatt Smith.
Again, I think he's a Baylor guy. I think he's still in a good headspace. I think he realizes that he still could play a huge role on this team for this season. So, I'm not expecting too much, I guess you could say, drama there. I think Sawyer is really bought into the program, and I expect him to play hard this year in whatever role that is. I would expect nothing less from him.
Yeah, I think he understands, and I think he was able to talk to Jake Spavital afterwards and, you know, just talk through it and I guess, you know, reset his head as far as like now you didn't wake up tomorrow or even you don't wake up today. Today's the first day you haven't woke up where you're in the midst of a quarterback competition. The first time in several months that's been the case. So now you're QB2. You got to prepare as though you're going to play and help Daquan in any way that you possibly can while also staying ready yourself and just doing what needs to be done to help this team. That's where his head needs to be and where I think that's where it is. And I think mm-hmm. he understands like he's going to play at some point in time.
Yeah.
Sooner rather than later. So he needs to stay ready, and this isn't by any means of like, all right, well, you're riding the bench the rest of the year. Far from that. So I think he's not going to have time to really sit and wallow too much. Mm-hmm. And I think he's professional enough that he's handled it well, and both guys knew going in that somebody was going to be the winner and somebody was going to be QB2. So it's him, and I think he had to have had prepared himself for this over the last few months, knowing that this was a possibility all along. So I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. Let's see here. Doc Crowell, do you predict any current Baylor commits getting ratings bumps or drops after their senior year?
See, this is so difficult for me to predict because Baylor hasn't really gotten many favors when it comes to recruiting bumps after the season. I think there are some guys that are deserving of those bumps. I mean, I don't know how Edward Griffin can stay as an 84-3 star if he goes out and goes 12-1 at Coppell again and does the things he did a year ago and puts together two straight really good seasons. I find that hard to believe. So he's definitely one that absolutely I think should take a huge jump forward. Aside from that, I'm not sure that any guys take a too big of a step forward from where they're currently ranked, even though, you know, maybe you could argue some should.
Are there any spots reserved for kids who might surprise everyone and have breakout senior years?
Yeah, there's spots. I would also say there's spots for if Baylor has a really good season. So maybe Baylor tries to get back in on some guys that they missed out on the first time around. But when you put together a really good season and then you come back with this idea of, hey, we just won, you know, we just made a bowl game. Look at the direction the program is heading. I think if Baylor's able to start selling that, that could be just another piece of the puzzle to building this recruiting thing into something that's even bigger than what I could have imagined. You know, what they did this year with the 3-9 record is remarkable, but they could finish this class even stronger if they have a really successful year. So they have room for both of those options as far as surprise breakout candidates and guys that they might circle back to or who maybe they missed on the first time around.
What freshmen, if any, have received the most play these scrimmages?
I mean, a lot of them play a lot with the threes. I would say that the one who has made the biggest mark, and I feel like we've mentioned him a lot, is Jaden Porter. I think that there is a outside chance that Jaden Porter doesn't redshirt this year. Probably depends on if there's injuries in front of him, I would think, but he has been awfully impressive. He might be one that's going to be hard to keep off the field. I think I've heard great things about him. It feels like in every scrimmage they play in, he comes up with a big play. He's been extremely impressive, which is really encouraging about his future. So he is the guy that I'm looking at as far as who maybe doesn't redshirt this year. He's probably the one that stands out the most. As far as other guys, you know, Nate Bennett's played really well. There's been good reports about him. He's throwing the football well, getting a good grasp of the offense. I think he could be a good player in the future. Alex Foster is already 6'5", 292 pounds, which is awesome to see.
Yeah, I saw him at practice the other day. I guess he's been hurt because one of the coaches was kind of poking at him after a drill about, like, finally being out there, basically. Uh-huh. But he was one of the bigger kids in the entire D-line room. And I was, you know, who is that? Because sometimes players have their jerseys all pulled up over mm-hmm. the pads, and so you can't tell what number they are. And so it's just like, who is that? And then I think maybe it was you that said, yeah, that's Alex Foster. It's just like, damn. because he's big as a freshman in a good way. But he's still very much, you know, a young guy. But yeah,
he looks different.
You definitely look at him and you go like, okay, wow. Especially when you realize he's a freshman.
Right. He was my highest rated player in this past class because he is just built different. I mean, 6'5", 292 is a true freshman who didn't enroll early. That is something. I do think he's a little raw. I don't think he's going to, unless there's injuries, I can't imagine him not redshirting. But who knows? Maybe he really turns a corner as the season progresses. And either way, the future is very bright for him. So those are some of the freshmen I think I've seen the most out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that unless Foster just turns into like the game day, lights come on, and he's like this ferocious beast you can't keep off the field. I could see a red shirt in his future, especially with the way they've added depth to the D-line. But hey, if you break that mold and you force your way into playing time as a true freshman, I don't think anybody's going to be too upset about that. As far as Jaden Porter, I think that's probably a good move if he plays as much as possible, because as much as it's about this year and this year alone, Aranda can't bank on, you know, 2025, or no one can for that matter, really. You need some receivers to start stepping up that aren't transfer guys, because everybody else is graduating that's been productive for you here as of late. And so you've got this new wave of guys that need to start getting ready to be the guys. And I think Jaden Porter's kind of the head of maybe those group of young players, a receiver that are next up. So yeah, if he could play a little bit this year or a lot this year and even make a mark, that would be something nice to build off heading into next year as well.
Right. The only other one I can think of is Josh Lair at star, but I just, that would probably take something happening with Kendrick Simpkins for, I think, that to happen. Again, a lot of these we're talking about, oh, if an injury happens in front of them, then maybe, but Lair's got a lot of talent and a lot of potential as well. So felt like I need to mention him.
MDW451, apologies if this has already been asked and answered, but as the team utilized in-helmet communication in practices, scrimmages, how do you think this new technology for college football will affect the game?
Yes, I believe so, to practice it, right? So I do believe that's been used a ton. I think as far as impacting the game, I think it's definitely going to give players and guys who are play calling an advantage, because you're able to kind of see everything and diagnose what you saw and be able to relay that onto the field a lot easier. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a game changer. I think it's going to give play callers an advantage.
Yeah, Joey McGuire, when he joined us at Big 12 Media Days and maybe even before that, he had talked about the headsets and like kind of the way that it's all set up now, and he wasn't the biggest fan of the way that they're being utilized as far as just like, I'm trying to think of what it was. Like, he called it like a half move, basically, or a half measure, I think was the term of, it's a good thing, but not like fully fleshed out the way that he would prefer it to be. Does that make sense?
Like
it's
not like quite the NFL.
Yeah, it's like
level.
1 foot in, but not both feet in the way that he would prefer it to be. And I think that's how some coaches feel. It's definitely different. It's not crazy like, I kind of wondered, like, would it be a big deal? Like, who's going to wear it? And then it was just like, oh, well, it's going to be the starting quarterback and the starting middle linebacker. I mean, it's not nothing too fancy, but I think it's going to be an adjustment, but that's what you've been working on this offseason to some extent. I think it should be helpful more than hurtful for certain, but I don't know how much it helps, you know, big picture-wise. Right. If it's like drastically changes things, but I do think it's going to be a lot more convenient to have a more modern take on the communication system. So appreciate that question and look forward to, once we get some more evidence and like in-game action, like maybe by like week 3 or 4, can ask Aranda like, how has that process been and what's that all looked like. So thank you for the question there, MDW, about the technology. I think it remains to be seen fully how much it will affect things. Right, Papa Bear, has Brooks Miller been taking the majority of reps since Matt Jones has been out with injury? How are you feeling about the two deep for middle and weak side linebacker?
So, no, that's actually been Jeremy Evans who has gotten most of the snaps, and I would say Carmelo Jones is the next guy who's been getting most of the snaps at Mike, and then Josh White. That's kind of the group that I'm kind of looking at there at the Mike linebacker spot. Brooks is more so playing the Will linebacker, which is going to be behind Keaton Thomas. Don't know the exact depth chart there, but I do think it's some combination of Ra-Ra Dilworth and Brooks Miller as the backups there currently.
All right, and from Mikey, if we could afford to redshirt one of our senior receivers, who would you save for next year? Thanks again for all of the great coverage this offseason. And always, I think I'm ready to believe again. Sick 'em. Well, thank you very much, Mikey. And hopefully those beliefs are bolstered by actual wins on the field, and I think I do think there's a feeling of belief in this team that's kind of in the air right now as we've drawn closer to the season. So you're not alone in that, and just only hoping that the good times are just getting started here. But if you could afford to redshirt one of the senior receivers, who would you save, Grayson?
So are we doing who would I like to be on this team next year, or who can they afford to not have this year? And then
I don't know about all that. I think he's just wondering if you could take a senior receiver and save him for next year. Who would you save?
Be Ketron Jackson would be the one that I would want to have back next year. But again, none of these guys are redshirting. They're playing all of them. They have to. They need all these guys to play. I think that Ketron would be the one that would be, I think, the best if they were able to have him back next year. But again, not going to happen.
He never redshirted, did he? Or did he?
At Arkansas, I think he might have.
I don't recall, he might have redshirted. But yeah, I was just wondering about that in terms of his development and where he is. Obviously, he's not going to redshirt, but I was just curious as far as I thought he played right away, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, because Hal Presley and Monterey Baldwin both lost their redshirt year because they played in that 2021 season. And probably, I'm not going to say wrongfully, because they absolutely needed they needed the depth, but goodness gracious, I mean, for how little they played that year, you kind of wish they had a redshirt year and were able to come back for another season. But it looks like, I mean, it looks like, you know, Ketron's listed as just a straight-up senior. So
yeah, I don't think he redshirted. Yeah, I don't think he did. But you're obviously not going to redshirt him this year because you plan on him being a big part of your offense and hopefully being able to have a few more touchdowns and get past that 500-yard mark and lean more towards 1,000. That would be great. But he's got to get healthy first based on the latest reports there, although nothing too crazy to get worried about just yet. But he is, along with Matt Jones, dealing with some injuries right now as they progress their way through camp. So that is going to, I think, put a bow on the mailbag. Appreciate you know, everybody chiming in there, obviously bouncing around as far as the questions go. Grayson addressed some of that, but appreciate everybody's feedback and insight and takes as well, including Mr. Lemire, Papa Bear, Mikey, and also Alpha Needle and MDW and Doc Crowell and Wyatt Smith and Kasich Bear and Jared Burr and Overrated and DJ Carey. And thank you to all of you for getting into that mailbag as we start to get that thing prepared for the long journey of an actual football season starting next week. We won't have a game to talk about as far as a result, but we will have a game to preview. And then after that, it'll be results and results and results for the foreseeable future and all that comes with that and all the consequences of those wins and losses and everything in between. So here we are. We have arrived. It is nearly game week, and this is the last podcast before we preview Tarleton State. So, wow, here we are.
And give our predictions for the season. So be ready for that, Craig. I know how much you love prediction season.
I've just done it 15 times already, including last week. So if you remember Sikkim 365, you can see those. But, it'll be time to start getting into predictions on a weekly basis as well. And I don't know. We might have to we didn't always get the Big 12 games, and now there's even more teams. So I don't know how we'll weave that in. We might just have to pick a couple games a week or something, because 8 games bare minimum every week is, I don't know if it's feasible time wise every single episode, but we'll see what we can do there. And cheers to a new season, a new team, and a new conference in many ways as well that we're about to embark on watching with the 4 new Pac-12 schools turning into Big 12 schools. So just a lot of unknowns, but that's part of the mystery and the excitement of this upcoming season. So Grayson, anything before we get out of here?
No, just be sure to check out Sikkim 365 premium side. Also our, deal with Baylor Plus, the bundle that we have going, $17.99 to have both, a subscription to both. It's absolutely worth it, especially with the season coming up. We're going to have tons of content. Baylor Plus is going to have tons of content, so be sure to check that out and take advantage of the new bundle that we're promoting currently.
Yep, so get your fill, take advantage of those deals if you're a Baylor fan, which I imagine 100% of the people probably watching this are. And before you go, if you're watching live on YouTube, Tuesdays at 11:15 is where you can find us live streaming on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365. YouTube page. And if you'd hit like and subscribe, we would very much appreciate that. That's how you can help support in your own way and to help grow the channel. We would love that. And if you haven't, yeah, subscribe to sickem365.com as the season gets underway for all the behind-the-scenes talk and just having an arena to talk with other Baylor fans and get into the mud sometimes or just reminisce on the positive things as well. But yeah, a lot going on over on the website, over on the YouTube channel as well. So next week, it is preview time. Thanks to Jack McKenzie behind the scenes. Thanks to Grayson Grundhafer as well. And we do appreciate you. I'm Craig Smoke. And until next Tuesday, this has been the Bearcast on sickem365.com.